A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It's time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM with all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today. And stop by any MGM casino on the strip with your state-issued ID to open an account. Start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. You know the new graphics we have there, the new shots of us? There's one of them where I'm like swaying back and forth like I have to desperately go to the restroom.
I've also realized that for whatever reason, me and you decided to wear like the exact same thing.
Eggplant.
Yeah, we're both wearing like eggplant with blue coats.
Before we get to Drew here, Drew Ditzik kind enough to join us. So let me just do a couple more of these from our college football betting guide, which comes out on Thursday. So 18 people in this, 18 experts in the grid that starts it all off. And it's not just the grid, by the way. The grid is just as Flatter would say, whet your appetite. 17 of 18 had this school in the 4-team playoff. You can probably guess what that is.
Florida State.
No, that would be Georgia, you homer. But Florida State, I will say this. Florida State, there are four different teams, and I'll only give away the one. There are four different teams that are only mentioned twice among the 18 experts to make the playoffs. Just twice were they brought up, and Florida State is one of those four teams.
Wow, haters.
I would be one of them.
There you go. Looking out.
I'm your boy.
You're looking out.
Nobody had Bama in the national championship game. They didn't even get to the – nobody. Zero out of 18 had Bama in the national championship. There were two schools that were mentioned, one in the national championship. Can you name one of them now that you know what I just said for the playoff?
Georgia.
Florida State. Are you paying attention? Jeez. And then 14 of 18 had this school, well, Georgia in the national championship, and eight, I won't mention any of them, but eight different teams out of 18 to win the national title. Eight different teams were picked to win the national title.
Wow, okay.
Yep. How about that?
Going deep down the board. Let's go.
Yeah. I don't know if FSU was not one of them, Kelly. Sorry about your alma mater. Apologize.
Yeah, it's okay.
Drew Ditzik joins us, ladies and gentlemen. College football might be the only sport he doesn't handicap. He joins us from both the Deep Dive podcast, which he does with his buddy Andy Molitor, Ditzik Classic, and, of course, NBC Sports Bet the Edge podcast. How you doing, Drew?
I'm great. Anyone of your experts? Which of the experts had TCU last year, and who did they like this year?
Oh, great question. The answer to which I don't know.
I can't imagine anyone at TCU last year. That was a little wild.
No, nobody pre-flop had TCU. I don't believe. I don't want to. If somebody did, good for them.
I'll see if I can find.
I had Duggan 100-1, but that was mid-season to win the Heisman. But no one had TCU. And I think other people had TCU mid-season, but not pre-flop. Yeah. There are some obscure ones among that group, though. Obscure, I don't know about obscure, but obscure, you know, put in perspective. A couple teams from, or at least one team from the Pac-12, pardon me, that you might not expect, and a team from the Big Ten that you might not expect. So anyway, but the reason you don't do college football is just a timing thing, right? Like you just don't have the time.
Oh yeah. Back when I was a losing player, I would spend 90% of my week thinking about the NFL, handicapping the NFL, and then on Friday night before Saturday morning, I would donk away on the most popular college football games that I was just kind of interested in watching. And it turns out that's a losing strategy. betting into the most efficient of the college games at the worst possible time is a great way to give back any edge at all you have in any other sport you're handicapping. So I stopped betting college altogether. Nowadays, I do hit some information-based stuff. I have a couple of friends who are really, really outstanding college football originators who are kind enough to share their most favorite looks before they completely nuke the board. So I bet it here and there, but I definitely am not originating anything college.
Drew sounds like he might have participated in a late night Tommy Chang University of Hawaii wager.
Oh, yeah.
I just want
to. Oh, yeah. Tommy Chang was a legend.
Just a guess. Okay. Yeah. NFL, though, you're all about it. And let me just ask you, because I know last week when we talked, you're like, I haven't really made that many new NFL bets. I'm just curious about any of the latest news. Maybe it was the Jonathan Taylor stuff in Indianapolis. Maybe it's Sean Payton running his mouth as the coach of the Denver Broncos. Is there anything recently, maybe it's something else, that has moved the needle for you on any team or any of your thinking?
Well, the big needle mover is the Jalen Ramsey injury. That obviously stinks. I feel, I was quietly excited about the Miami Dolphins. I hadn't played them to win anything like Super Bowl or NFC, but it was the team that I kind of couldn't get over a little bit of a disconnect between, because I don't have a huge gap between the strength of that roster and then the three teams that were market graded a tier ahead of them in the Chiefs, Bengals, and Bills. It's just that the gap was narrow. The only real knock you can put on the Dolphins is that Tua has never, he has gotten his playoff stinker out of the way. So, it was going to take a little bit of fortuitous seeding and opponents to help the Dolphins get there. But the Jalen Ramsey injury moves their defense from me from a top five unit down to a kind of middle of the pack. I think I grade their roster now 14th. It moves their DBs from top half down to 20th for me. I don't know that the Eli Apple experience is going to work the way they expect it to work, but I all of a sudden see, you're going up against some pretty incredible quarterbacks on your schedule this year if you're Miami, and going into this now without Jalen Ramsey is a pretty decent ding. So a little bit of cold water on any kind of Miami enthusiasm, although I still have them as clearly the second best team in the AFC East, and I have the Jets 4th.
You have the Jets 4th. Ooh, yeah. Wait, let me circle back to that in a second. Let me get back to the Dolphins for a second, because I too have said here a few times on this show that I feel like Miami is a team that people are strangely overlooking, which I guess was my way of saying kind of what you were saying, which is, I get it, maybe they're not the Chiefs, but I feel like we have them way below the elite of the AFC. Those are more your words than mine, but I did feel we were overlooking them. The Jalen Ramsey thing is interesting because I have cited Football Outsiders' analysis of cornerbacks in the past. And one of the things that Aaron Schatz was super keen on focusing in on was how cornerbacks are a very volatile position. You can't really project from one year to the next with most of these guys. Could it be that a guy, even as good as Jalen Ramsey is, that might be a position where, you can't really have counted on his production from a previous year to the next?
It's possible. I will say that I actually spent a good amount of my offseason looking at aging curves for different players and positions, just because I was curious of like how to kind of forward project who is going to come off, fall off a cliff. Because there's a couple of teams who are coming into this season with some gray beards, and it's enticing to try to come up with some reason to doubt them. What I found looking at aging curves, particularly for defensive backs, year over year is chaos. If you are 50th percentile to 75th percentile or 25th to 75th percentile, if you're kind of in the bulk of the players that play that position, it's chaos, which, your peak year can be wildly different than your average, wildly different year over year. But if you're in the upper, surely the upper quartile, but even more than that, like the upper, 5% of your position in terms of what your peak value is, then number one, you're a heck of a lot flatter over the balance of your career. And number two, your career tends to be much longer. But with DBs, it has like a distinct dip when you're in your late 20s, early 30s, where you kind of have to transition from using your speed and athleticism to kind of using your know-how and understanding of quarterbacks and wide receivers and kind of just be able to think strategically about how you're playing the position. And there's like a clear kind of bounce back for some cornerbacks who figure that out, and then others who just never get over losing the athleticism, and then just they're out of the league in a matter like faster than you could believe. And so I think with a player like Ramsey, whose peak was so high, I would expect him to continue to contribute at a really high level well longer than we would have thought. There's examples of kind of guys who he matches career trajectory with, like Charles Woodson and guys who played into their late 30s. Expecting Ramsey to just completely dip this season was not expected. And now, you know, now you've got a pretty fragile secondary here going, you know, to be paired with what is a really, really impressive, you know, step forward in the defensive coordinator position to Vic Fangio, combined with a really young and elite pass rush. I mean, the front seven for the Miami Dolphins is amazing. So it's now all of a sudden the type of defense where I don't mind kind of laying the points with the Dolphins or, you know, looking for an under when they're going up against a team that has kind of a middling or poor O-line. But if you're going up against a good O-line and a good quarterback, then all of a sudden I'm not feeling as excited about backing the Dolphins. And that's kind of like looking right at the Chiefs, for instance.
But no futures bets for you as a result of this.
No. I think realistically, it just cooled me off on one I would make.
Cornerback is a fascinating position because I remember Nnamdi Asamoah. One year they didn't throw at him at all. The next year they're like, why didn't we throw at him all year last year? You know, that kind of thing. And then you have the Daryl Greens of the world who can make it up with speed late. We'll come back. Why does he have the Jets last next?
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Turn a loss into a win with BetMGM, the official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. Place a same-game parlay wager with at least four legs on any MLB game. And if all legs of the parlay hit but one, you'll get your stake back and bonus bets up to $25. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 and over wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. U.S. promotional offers not available in Kansas, Mississippi, D.C., Nevada, New York, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in Colorado, D.C., Illinois, Indiana, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Mississippi, New Jersey, Nevada, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, West Virginia, Virginia, and Wyoming. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY. That's Hope, New York, or text Hope, New York, 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona, 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts, 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa, 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan, 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. This offer not valid to Puerto Rico residents. Gil Alexander, it's Kelly Bidlin. Let's talk some college football. Our guide is out on Thursday. This gentleman is the founder, the czar, the emperor of collegefootballnews.com, where he writes, I'm going to say 5 bajillion articles a day on the subject of college football, a treasure trove of information. It's Peter Futak, everybody. How you doing, Pete?
Gil, how you been?
I've been great, man. Great to see you. How's your summer? Good?
Yeah. I think so. It's about over now because you're right. It's once it turns August 1st, people actually care about this whole college football thing and a little bit more. And I'm actually in a holding pattern because as we speak, I believe the good people, the Pac-12, are trying to decide the future of college sports as we know it. And if they can come up with the right media deal or else if this thing's going to completely blow up in the next few years, we don't really have a Pac-12 anymore. So this is going to get really interesting over the next 24 to 48 hours.
I mean, isn't that the macro headline of this year, that in addition to it being the last year of the 4-team playoff, it's the last year of the Pac-12 as we know it. It's the last year of the Big 12 as we know it. It's just not going to be the same after this in so many ways.
Yeah, and the two tie together because you're right. Next year, the expectations are all going to change because next year, really, you have to just win your Power 5 conference and then finish in the top 11 because the 12th team is probably always going to be the Group of 5 champion. And so if you're in the Pac-12 and you care about sports, this is the business thing, not a sports thing, you want to stay around because you got a better shot at getting into the college football playoff. And we'll see. We'll see where the media deal comes in. Not everyone's going to take off from the Pac-12, even if they do leave. So it's going to be an interesting time to see how this all shakes out. But we're talking peanuts here. The big stuff, and kind of you're alluding to, is after next year when USC and UCLA are in the Big Ten and Texas and Oklahoma are in the SEC.
Yes.
Then those two conferences are just, you know, what are we talking about here? Okay, so the Pac-12 loses a couple teams, whatever. Those two are still going to be the monsters.
Yes, the Big Ten and the SEC. It will be a whole different world. Let's, for this final year of college football as we know it, let's just talk about real quick. Let's try to squeeze in a whole bunch of things. We'll do rapid fire here, and let's start with the Pac-12, which you do a great job of pointing out at collegefootballnews.com just how underappreciated Lincoln Riley might be in his first 6 years of coaching. USC with the highest season win total in the Pac-12, Caleb Williams trying to have a back-to-back Heisman campaign, but they haven't beaten the Ducks since 2016, the Oregon Ducks. Haven't won in Eugene since 2011, and Oregon is probably, along with Washington, which just had unbelievable offense with Michael Penix Jr. at the helm yesterday. Those are the two teams that are the biggest contenders. Oregon schedules, yeah, they have a tough road Pac-12 schedule. And then with Penix, you just wonder if, you know, what's the standard with him? The injuries or last year where he didn't have any? And you hope it's last year. Where do you stand on all three of these teams?
Yeah, well, first of all, the ironic part about this whole thing with the Pac-12 blowing up is it's probably top to bottom one of the most interesting conferences in the country. Is that, you know, okay, Stanford's kind of the free space this year, but Arizona's better. Cal's better. Arizona State's going to be better. Colorado's going to at least be more talented. So you have all these different teams where we're going to talk about the teams at the top, but everyone seems like they have an NFL quarterback. You know, everyone seems like they have a ton of talent back. So the thing about this is yes, USC is the star of the show here, but on the wrong day, if that defense isn't working and if Caleb Williams isn't 100%, and that's a whole discussion for another day about whether or not, you know, how long does, you know, he's going to want to, you know, really be interested and hang around and play in this thing if he's got $250 million waiting for him like all these other quarterbacks are getting. But yeah, Penix Jr., his thing is going to be, can he stay healthy? Because if he's 100%, that Washington offense works, it rocks, and they can beat just about anybody in the Pac-12 or in the country and on the schedule. Oregon is always good. It's always going to be right there, except there's always that one date in the middle of November somewhere in Arizona where they're going to just take their eye off the ball and lose. And then we haven't even talked about the one team that's still the defending champion two times. Utah is probably better than mm-hmm. it's been. As long as Cam Rising is okay and off that knee injury, they're going to be even better than they were last year. So it is a loaded Pac-12, but USC's at the top of that heap.
Is Utah at 6-1 the best bet on the board to win the conference, given the number?
I would think so. Why not? I mean, they've proven that they can do this before. The question is just getting to the Pac-12 championship, because as we've seen with Utah and getting to the brass tacks here, Utah is fantastic at home. They lose to top teams usually when they get away from Salt Lake City. So if they can get through some of the, you know, if they can just own Salt Lake City and maybe win one or two key games outside of this, it's just going to be getting to the Pac-12 championship. But yeah, underappreciate Utah at your own risk, because they've proven the last 2 years that, you know, forget all the other shiny objects. They've got the rock solid tradition they're going now.
All right, let's transition to the Big 12 for a second. Obviously, this is, you know, Kansas State, TCU, Texas Tech, they're going to have something to say about this. But when always we talk about the Big 12, we talk about Texas and Oklahoma, who are the two short shots to win this. Texas with Quinn Ewers under center, but obviously Arch Manning waiting his turn, one would say. Malik Murphy also there, probably not even their best players, right? Xavier Worthy, the wideout's probably the best player. And then Oklahoma, who was 6-7 last year under Brent Venables, who was supposed to come there and be a defensive guru, not so much. Do you think that regresses back to normalcy this year?
A little bit. And, you know, we just talked about the Pac-12 being even. Well, look at the top to bottom at the Big 12. Where's your free space? I mean, is Houston, is that your worst team in the Big 12 this year? You know, can't, because Kansas is pretty good. West Virginia is all right. So you've got everybody in the Big 12 is good enough to beat anybody else on the right day. So Texas is, out of all these teams, we're talking who's going to get to the Big 12 championship. Texas is the best of the bunch. But as my line goes, Texas wise, that's an 11-win team in a 9-win body. We know what happens with them. They've got all the talent in the world, but they're going to misfire on a game here and there. And to your point with Oklahoma, yeah, they should be better. The defense is going to be stronger. As long, their problem last year was more that they didn't get a consistent quarterback play when Dylan Gabriel got hurt. If he stays in one piece, that's going to be better. So Oklahoma's going to be a little bit better overall. Those are the two top teams in the conference this season. But Kansas State, they've got a lot returning from that team that actually won the Big 12 championship last year. I do think TCU falls back a little bit. And you mentioned Texas Tech, which I'm in love with. This is going to be a high-octane team. They've got a whole lot of talent there. Tyler Shug is a kind of a fringy, hidden pro, deep cuts pro prospect who might be that guy who rises up this year and is like, uh-oh, there's your first rounder. So that offense is going to blow up. So there are a whole lot of good teams in the Big 12 this year, including the new teams that are going to come in to make it even stronger. But you're right, Texas is the one team out of that bunch that should rise above the fray.
But if Utah at 6-1 is the best bet in the Pac-12, is Texas Tech, in your opinion, the best bet in the Big 12? 12-1
to win. No, because you have to get there first, and then you have to win it. So it's I would say probably not. I would probably say Kansas State again. As boring as that sounds, because again, they're just they return just about everybody. They're sound on the lines. So Kansas State's a pretty good option there. And you're looking at the board right there. Oklahoma State at 40-1. I think they're undervalued overall because they don't have Spencer Sanders at quarterback this year. There are a few question marks, but it's a Mike Gundy team that has a lot of good parts returning. Their lines are going to be fine, and that offense is going to be good. You know, so if you've got all these teams in the bunch of a pretty even bunch, 40-1 on Oklahoma State is not insane.
I'm going to have you back to talk Heisman with us because we don't have enough time to flesh it out right now. But I hesitate to ask you this in the last 45 seconds because I know, Peter, for those who aren't aware, you're the biggest Power 5 snob there is. And you're an SEC
Well,
snob.
Even more than ever now.
Even more than ever. So dare I ask you, who do you have at the national championship, sir?
I mean, you have to because there aren't any group of five teams that are going to be even in the mix. But to get into the national championship, Georgia, just assume it. Just they are by far the most talented team in the country. Their schedule is not that bad. It's getting schedule shamed, but their schedule isn't that easy. But they should roll through it enough to get to the Final Four. Michigan, Ohio State winner is definitely going to be there. I think the Michigan, Ohio State loser, as this plays out again for the second straight year, is going to get there. And to pick anybody else too wacky, you're going off the moon. I'm going to say USC is my fourth team.
Okay. All right. There's some. There's some. Yeah, obviously it's a Power 5 in this discussion, but you tend to go to the very, very top in this discussion, and at least you got USC in there. I like it. All right, Pete, we'll do Heisman next, okay, next time you're on. How about that?
Absolutely.
Peter Futak, collegefootballnews.com. Check it out. You can follow him on Twitter, at Pete Futak, F-I-U-T-A-K. Let's talk some baseball next with Mark Borchardt, Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Numbers Game proudly brought to you by BetMGM. Don't forget, though, whenever you're out there, we all know about the speed of sound, but have you ever thought about the sounds of speeding? Drive too fast and you can hear the sound of your vehicle crashing because one way or another, speeding catches up with you. That's paid for by NHTSA. It's Gil Alexander. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Robert at Robert B01, he says, looking forward to Gil's top 10 sushi bars restaurants on today's show. Oh, Humans did his fast food 50 this morning.
Yep. Rankings are out.
Robert wants my top 10 sushi. How anticipated do you think number one would be on that list?
You should just do top 10 and leave one blank.
You could do 10 through 2.
Just a question mark.
10 through 2 and then walk off. People be like, I hate you. Let's see here. Kevin at Clone, I won't even read that. Boys, instead of calling them tweets now, should it be called X-Crete? See what he does? Like this, he wrote it like the island Crete, though. He said, we got X-Cretes. I can't take credit for this. Saw it a comment last night. That is very clever. Jason H11, I never thought I'd hear Women's Soccer America and shoot it in the same sentence. Kelly, you are one of a kind.
Shoot it!
let's see.
Too much dribbling.
Z free. I was looking for a black X or Z tweet thingy, but didn't see any. Got any tennis plays today? I did. I think there's one left, and I think one got canceled. Like I can't even keep up anymore when I'm doing the show because like one of them in DC apparently somebody already withdrew before the match started. Then there's one that was supposed to happen, and I don't understand if it's happening anymore. So I don't even know if we have tennis picks left.
Do you have anything going in Europe or anything?
We did, but they're all done. So.
That makes sense.
I can't even answer the question. I mean, I apologize for that, but it's such a weird weather slash whatever kind of time. Ian McDonald. Oh, I said Tommy Chang. I meant Timmy Chang. He says, Timmy Chang was a hell of a quarterback for Hawaii, too. Thank you. Appreciate it. Sean's Fox Plays said, the bigger question with Jalen Ramsey, we were talking to Drew about Jalen Ramsey, the best corner of the Dolphins, a lot of people forgetting Howard even exists. Don't forget, also, draft corner and Smith to help out with loss of Ramsey. The issues can Skylar Thompson play when Tua gets knocked out again? Oh, so he's all over about the Dolphins. A lot of people were asking about the Jalen Ramsey thing because he obviously played some safety last year as well. So we'll get into more of those, but we want to talk to Mr. Wishnev from his mom's Cork Attic somewhere in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He is the star of the Megapod, the Beating the Book Megapod that we do all football season, but is known mainly for his in-game college and college basketball and college football betting. He joins us now. How you doing, Todd?
How are you? I'm not from the Cork Addict. I'm at a friend's house. We're having the floors ripped out at my mom's.
You're in front of a chain link fence, I see, with pictures on it.
It's actually just a dining room wall.
Little green screen maybe happening back there. All right, Todd. So I said before the break, and I said a couple times here on the show, you really are the best in-game college basketball bettor I know. You're able to process possession and pace real quickly, multiple games at the same time. Do some of those sort of tenets exist when you're doing college football, or is there a difference for you?
Well, I mean, there's a difference. College football, there are some similarities. I mean, for instance, you know, if you have high pace, high scoring early in a college basketball game, a lot of times it's better just to bet the first half over as opposed to the game, because there might be adjustments made at halftime that are going to shift it, or you might not get the fouls that you have. Like, you know, you might be in a college basketball game, you might be at the 15-minute mark and each team has four fouls already and the pace is going crazy. You might as well just bet that game over in the first half, because you're probably going to see that same type of strategy continue for the rest of the first half. And then there might be adjustments made at halftime that would make a bet on the total for the game not as good as a bet on the total for the half. Similarly, in college football, you have situations like, for instance, you have teams that are major mismatches, or even when you just have a high scoring game. Oftentimes, if you can recognize that early in the first quarter of a football game, it's better to just bet the first half stuff rather than the game, because the fourth quarter is going to be played very differently. For example, if Alabama is ahead, you know, 14-0 after 3 minutes in a game against, you know, Alcorn State or some garbage team that they could win by 80 if they wanted to, they're going to call the dogs off, you know, 7 minutes left in the third quarter or 4 minutes left in the third quarter, and then it could kill your over. So a lot of times, like, I would like to bet a team total over in the first half rather than for the full game. And that's kind of similar to in college basketball, where things could get totally different in the second half, whereas in a first half, you know, you have everything going for you, fouls, pace, and, you know, everything that's happening.
Yeah, I mentioned no sport reveals itself quicker, I believe, than college football, whether one team you can recognize is going to be dominant over another. You just talked about that and how you would bet that. What about when both defenses clearly can't stop the other? That's a full game thing for you?
Yeah, that's the same kind of thing. I would still like to do it in the first half and then reconsider at halftime, but oftentimes, you know, that's a perfect example. You're watching the game. It's BYU against Utah State, and it's 14-14 after, you know, 8 minutes. And you're just like, okay, there's not going to be any stops in this game. Just bet the first half over, and then you don't have to worry about if the game changes radically because of halftime adjustments.
Are there certain coaches that have historically just absolutely torpedoed your philosophies on these things, like where they're just like, they're supposed to do, you know, what they're supposed to do, and they just refuse to? Luke Fickell leaps to mind, some of those end games in Cincinnati where he just keeps pushing it.
There's certain coaches that just, that Luke Fickell just makes me so angry about what he did in that game against Boston College. I'm still mad about it. You know, running hurry up 38-6 or some nonsense. But yeah, there's not really that much of that. And if you're watching the game, you can kind of see what's happening. But I mean, I'm just giving you a, you know, we're just talking in generalities, of course, but you know, in general, these kind of things are going to, you know, hold true. You know, Alabama may win the first half 38-0. The final score is going to be 45-7 or 45-3 or something like that, maybe 52-3, but they're not going to, you know, just keep rolling it up. It doesn't typically happen.
Yeah. In college basketball, just as this is anecdotal, you can tell me I'm wrong, but just in observing you, most of your in-game stuff is totals, right? You're more on the pace. You do sides as well, but most of it's totals.
I like the total the best. Yeah.
Yeah. College football is a little more evenly distributed.
Well, I mean, you can play, I like to play team totals. You know, you don't have that. I guess you do start, you're starting to get that more in Vegas now, but the team, I like to play team totals. Like an example I just gave you, you know, you see one team is just going to just shred this other team. bet that team total over first half, and then you don't have to worry about the point spread, you know, about what their defense is going to do or not. So in a sense, when I'm playing a team total, I'm playing a total, but I'm also playing a directional. But I like to play it with the total rather than with the spread often, because maybe I'm not as sure about their defense. You know, so that's what I like about the fact that you have team totals in game.
Are you do when it comes to totals and pace? I mean, obviously college basketball, it's such a, you know, it's quick math. You've done it on this show before, the amount of possessions teams are having, how that relates to the pre-flop total, how it's actually going. Is there any of that specifically in college football as well for you?
Well, yeah, I mean, you're going to realize, you know, what a number should look like after, you know, you see four possessions in a game that's lined 53 and both teams just went up and down the field. It's 14 all already. That 53 is wrong. It's just wrong. And the algorithm is going to, let's say there's let's just say, for instance, the end of the first quarter, right? The algorithm's going to say, okay, it's approximately one quarter of the game's gone. One quarter of 53 is, you know, let's say, I don't know, around 13 less. So there's probably about 46 points left. I'm sorry, I'm doing that wrong. Let's just use 56. It's easier. 56 would say be 28 points each quarter. So 14 points, but there's been 28 points. Let's say it's the end of the first quarter and it's 14 all. Now, this takes out the fact that second quarters are usually more scoring, but let's just pretend all the quarters were the same for argument's sake, right? If it's 14 all at the half, right, there was 28 points scored. There were supposed to be 14 points scored at that point, right? The rest of the algorithm of 42 points for the rest of the game is not going to be correct sometimes. And that's when you can recognize. Now, if it's 14 all in a game when it's SMU against, one of those crazy teams in their conference and the game's line 73, well, 14 all at the end of the first quarter is not so crazy, right? So you obviously have to know, you know, what the line should be versus what you're watching. So there is that concept to it, obviously, but it's not as direct as you see in college basketball, but it's there, definitely.
Last two questions. I just need really quick answers. One, are you as good at football as you are at basketball, college, doing this?
I would say college basketball is my number one. College football, I've been very good the last couple of years, doing this. So, yeah, I've been pretty good in the college football, too.
And two, do you prefer to do this quietly in anonymity, or do you prefer to share with a bunch of people?
I might be sharing it on my, on that WhatsApp group that I listed with the college football this year as well.
Right. Got to run. Thank you, Todd. I appreciate it, man.
No problem. Good to see you, Gilly.
You too. Todd Wishnev, everybody. We'll come back with my mishpucha, Chrissy Andrews from the South Point, next.